How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is Goop Yourself, the podcast where we talk about everything goop. I'm Brian Rucker.
I'm Aggie Hewitt.
And it's been another dire week in these United States of America.
Has it?
I think because, like, I was planning to drive up to my mom's house for Thanksgiving. And then, you know, like, this week we, like, officially decided that we weren't going to go up. And it's, you know, smart and the right decision, but I guess because I don't see my family that often, I am, like, feeling a little sad about it, which, you know, everyone is fucking dealing with the same thing. So, but it's, you know, I just wanted to get out of the house and it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I canceled my Thanksgiving too, which was all going to be local people anyway, but I'm just like, it's not worth it. I just don't care. Like, it's so not worth it. I'm actually really relieved that it's not happening because I know, like, the few things that I've gone to since COVID started, which I have not gone to a gathering or any of any sort. Like, I've seen friends one-on-one only.
Yeah, I think I've literally hung out with one friend outside twice or three times in this whole 8 months or 9 months, whatever. Yeah.
But, like, even doing that, I usually end up, like, freaking out and being like, oh my God, why did I do that? And I just, like, have, like, 2 weeks of being like, am I gonna get sick and da da da? And it's just like, I don't want to go to, like, a Thanksgiving at my parents' house, which, first of all, would have been outside anyway, so it would have been cold. And just, like, thinking the whole time, like, am I getting too close to these people? And am I gonna get anyone sick, or am I gonna get sick? But mostly, am I gonna get anyone else sick, which is, like, the primary concern when I'm, like, with my parents or any other, like, member of my family. And, like, I just don't want to deal with it. I'm just
exactly.
Like,
yeah. The mental, like, it's stress.
It's so not worth it.
Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, I have to say, I'm not optimistic that most of the country feels the same way. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, I feel like you'd have to be, like, so crazy to be like, no, like, I am doing this and you can't stop me from having a Thanksgiving. Like, I just can't get my head around it.
I mean, a big percentage of this country thinks COVID is, if not totally fake, like, completely exaggerated by the media. I started following a couple, like, right-wing people on Twitter just to, like, see what they're saying. And it's just crazy.
Yeah, I've definitely seen people be like, I am having a Thanksgiving with my family and celebrating this great nation, and people are trying to stop me from celebrating my family and America or whatever. And I'm just like, you are so deluded. I don't even know what to tell you. Like, what are you like? I just, why? Like, also Thanksgiving is like the number one skippable holiday. Like, when I was in college, I never did Thanksgiving. I like always like, I like, because you, I would never fly home for Thanksgiving and then go home for 2 weeks and then fly home again for Christmas. I would just stay in Chicago and then fly home for Christmas. Like, I missed so many Thanksgivings. Like, I'm fine without Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. No, I usually, I would the same way. Like, I would, you know, typically when I lived in New York, I would fly home once a year and it would be around Christmas time. I think this is just because now, like, I live in driving distance of my family, and I don't know. And it was like, we, you know, we were planning to have like a very small, just with, you know, with my mom and my sister and her husband and their kids, and then me and my husband. So it's like, you know, what is that, seven people? So we were sort of planning on this, and, you know, we were all quarantining, and I was going to get COVID tested today until, you know, we decided not to go. So I canceled the test. But so I think it was just like, I was like hyping it up a little bit in my mind, and then, you know, now, and then just sort of a quick decision to not do it. So I'll be, we'll be fine. We're going to, you know, Zoom with my cousins and do another Zoom with John's family. So we'll actually, you know, technically see more people than usual.
Yeah. That's what happened when I did my Passover Seder on Zoom. Like, we had all these people from New York and Oregon on it. So it was actually more people than I would have seen anyway. And it was actually more fun because of that.
Yeah. And so it'll be you and Brian, and you're making a turkey, or you said you're ordering?
No, I honestly, if I could get away with it, I would make absolutely nothing. I think I'm going to make a couple of pies, mostly as like gifts, but, I am not cooking a fucking turkey. First of all, it's two people. Second of all, I don't want to cook. I just like, I'm just thinking back to the Seder and like my kitchen. I think I said last time was like the most fucked up it's ever been in the history of my life. I mean, cooking like a feast in a tiny kitchen is just, it just takes up so much space and it gets so crazy in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have the counter space. I don't have a dishwasher. I am not doing it. And so I'll make the fucking pies and that's it.
That's great. You're making, I'm not even making pies. I ordered a couple pies for my family, but now, you know, John and I will have to choke down two pies all by ourselves, which,
oh no,
the worst.
Anything but that.
No. But yeah, I am, well, I had like a recipe for a roast chicken I was going to cook until there might be a little recipe on this newsletter that I might switch to, but that will come up later in this podcast.
Yeah, we'll definitely be talking about that and talking about it rather quickly because I think it's high for both of us.
It's what?
It sounds like it's high for both of us.
Well, yeah. Is there, did you see any Gwyneth news?
Yeah, one of them made my list. Ooh. But it's really not that interesting. I guess I'll just say what it is because I did double up on it. Her childhood home is selling.
I saw that too. It's
gonna be my status because it was for sentimental reasons, although she hasn't lived there in a long time. I do have another one that was gonna be also another status, so I'll just say that when we get to the list. But her childhood home is a $15.5 million townhouse in New York. And I don't know. The article I read was like, Gwyneth Paltrow was in the Royal Tenenbaums and she really did live in a house like that. And this is it.
Yeah. The article is from the Wall Street Journal, even though Wall Street Journal is behind a paywall. So I had to go to some.
Oh, I didn't read it on the Wall Street Journal. I read it on something called like Mansion News.
That's the one that it's mansionglobal.com. They just like plagiarized the Wall Street Journal article. Oh. But yeah, it's a $15.5 million townhouse. Okay. So Blythe Danner is like a Tony Award winning actress, and Bruce Paltrow is a producer. How are they that rich? Were they that rich and famous?
Well, I mean, New York real estate obviously has like just like increased a lot, and they they're not the owners of the house now.
No.
So they've sold it since, and they probably were wealth. I mean, yeah, they were probably fairly wealthy. I'm sure they also come from money anyway. Sure.
Well, yeah. So the Paltrows owned this place from 1984 to 1992. So I imagine in 1984, you could just be like relatively rich and buy an Upper East Side townhouse. Whereas now you really would have to be like a billionaire. Well, I guess if
you have to be like George Soros.
Yeah. Yeah. George Soros, Jeffrey Epstein, or Gwyneth Paltrow.
That's the trifecta. Yeah. Like I feel like they probably were wealthy and had it and sold it a long time ago. I don't think that like, if it was what it is now, they probably wouldn't have had it, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, I mean, now I think like, obviously it's, you know, $15.5 million. So Gwyneth could afford it now. I don't know that Blythe Danner in the '80s could afford $15.5 million, but
it wouldn't have been $15.5 million.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's okay. So like, I lived in New York for what, 13 or 14 years. I unfortunately never made any like rich friends like this. Cause I've never been in one of these Upper East Side townhouses. It's 7,200 square feet. It's five floors, which I guess like, yeah, that makes sense. Cause all those buildings are like five stories high, but I didn't even really think that like someone would just have the entire house and like live in a five-story mansion.
It's crazy that like there's a mansion in there. It's like a trick. Like it looks like a nice like apartment building, yeah. But inside it's like a mansion like you'd see in the suburbs.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's because I think everything in New York is so big and so close together. So you're seeing these buildings and from the outside, it looks very normal. But if you were, you know, on the outskirts of Salt Lake City, you would see the same size building and it would, you know, it's a giant McMansion. But yeah, it's like rich people, everyone says, oh, in New York, you don't have any space. Well, if you're rich, you have just as much space, if not more.
Yeah. I mean, you just don't have a front yard.
Well, the city is your front yard.
The city is your front yard. Yeah. The city is the fifth character in your.
But like, how fucked up. You're just, if you're a little girl, you're Gwyneth Paltrow and you just lit, like, this is what you're used to. This is how you grew up, is living in a five story mansion. And then, and then for her, it only got better.
I know.
That was like the humble beginnings.
Her humble beginnings were a five story mansion in New York. And now she's like the head of a global empire and even more rich than she was when she started.
I mean, it's to get inside the mind of someone like that. It's just.
Why? Like, who cares what they think? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to go. I mean, I know we have this podcast all about her, but like, also, I can't stop thinking about how I said the fifth character in a trifecta. I don't know what the hell I was talking about. I was just thinking about how in Sex and the City, they were always like, oh, right. The city is the fifth
character. It's a foomfecta.
In a foomfecta. A quartet. Anyway, cut the whole thing. The point is, I don't understand the. Like, I don't think a person who has that background really has anything to offer of interest that's interesting at all.
You're 100% right. And this is my fatal flaw as a person and as a thinker, and especially as like my creative interests, is I am fascinated with the rich. And I always have been, and I always will be. And that's just what I like to read about, what I like to write about, like, who I like. It's just, I don't know. It's terrible. It's horrible. But I like, you know, I like Edith Wharton books and I like reading Goop, and it's just like so fucked up, and it's a psychological defect, I guess.
My theory is that, well, everybody kind of, I think, feels the same way you do. And like, I think it's very normal. And when people are like, when we watch like any movie, it doesn't have to be a movie about the rich, but the characters are usually rich in it. Even if they don't say they're rich, they very clearly like they live in like these large houses. They have these like exciting wardrobes. Like, unless it's about like a poor person becoming rich, then, or like some like, I don't know, like slice of life movie or whatever. If you watch like an average like romantic comedy or like a even like a crime drama, like the people in it are going to be like well off. I think it's just because if you have that established as a baseline, like you have this room for drama that people don't have in their day-to-day lives because they're just trying to survive, which is too depressing to warrant like being made into a movie. Like yeah. No one wants to watch that.
Well, because poverty or even being, you know, working class, middle class or whatever, money is like one of the overriding issues in your day-to-day life. You're always thinking about money. You're always worrying about money. And so like, yeah, if you're, you know, these shows that Nicole Kidman does or whatever, you're free to explore anything else besides money, but you're still glamorizing it and you're still reveling in the money.
Yeah. And it's like, it's escapism. Like it's more fun. Like that Nicole Kidman show, if she lived in some like rundown shitty apartment and it was like her and her kid being like freaking out about the dad, you'd be like, oh no, not you, Nicole. But if she's like running around town wearing that like fucking $4,000 coat and she's and all of her friends are like these like business women and they're going to these like parties on the like these like penthouse parties in this like glass encased room, like you have something to look at.
Yeah
I mean, it's more visually appealing.
It's more visually appealing. I don't know. It's something about the psychology of the rich or, you know, maybe it is just, you know, vicariously living through them. Cause like The Crown, that's another show that it's the one show that drops on Netflix every year where I have to like binge it immediately. And, I don't know what that says about me, but it can't be anything good.
Well, that guy, we've talked about this before, but I do think that guy is really good. The guy that makes the crown.
Oh yeah. I mean, people who haven't seen The Crown, like sort of make fun of it. Cause there is sort of that, you know, wealth porn aspect to it, but it is like a very incisive show. And it talks about like power and sort of the randomness of this one family being given all this money and power and how they are just very mediocre people.
Well, he's like a total royalist. Like his thing is like, these people are tasked with this great responsibility and like, how do they navigate it? Which is like, I think I haven't really watched too much of The Crown, but I watched The Queen, which is the guy's movie. And like, that's about Elizabeth's relationship with Tony Blair. And that's definitely the theme of it, like that he like this like Democrat, whatever the hell he is, this like centrist Democrat of the Labor Party, like has to like learn to respect the crown and the queen and like understand what
what a struggle for a centrist Democrat to like respect wealth and power.
Well, that's I know exactly, but that's like, I mean, that's what it's about. He's like, oh god, yeah. Like as a figurehead and doesn't matter. And then he's like, oh, it's like really important for us to have a royal family because these people like are like the big they're I mean I'm putting it in like American terminology, but like these people are like the greatest patriots and they're like actually sacrificing so much for our country and like they only care about England and like making and like preserving England.
Well yeah, I mean they care about maintaining power and I guess they care about like not humiliating themselves, even though they constantly humiliate themselves. But I guess what I like, and I haven't seen The Queen in a long time, but the show, because it does have that reverence for the royal family in the sense of they do have like prestige and they do have power, but it also is like these people, the people themselves are completely ordinary. So I guess it is that sort of vicarious thrill of thinking, oh, like, you know, by another twist of fate, I could have been in the royal family. And like, what would I have done? Like, would I have tried to like do my duty and work as hard as possible like Elizabeth? Or would I just have been like a total, like, you know, chain smoking alcoholic loser like Margaret, because I don't have to do anything else. And then, you know, you regret, you're like, oh, I lived my life and I did absolutely nothing. So I think that's what's so good about the show, is because it does make the viewer like it lets the viewer in by showing these people as just totally ordinary people who have been given extraordinary power by random fate.
I guess. I mean, that's the idea of it, but I feel like it's, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really seen it, but have you seen the new season?
Yeah, I already watched it. It's great. I love every season. Gillian Anderson is completely insane as Margaret Thatcher. I've never seen a performance so broad.
I mean, Margaret Thatcher is like a fun character.
Yeah, like she's cartoony. I've never seen the Meryl Streep version, so I'm now I'm curious to like compare them. And the girl who plays Diana is
what the movie's called?
The Iron Lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
The girl who plays Diana, I think she's very pretty, and she gets a lot of Diana's like eye movements and like head tilts right, but I don't, she's like a, she's just a very young actress, and I don't know that she has like the gravitas. So I thought she was fine, but I wasn't like wowed by her, I guess.
Did you read what the Hollywood Elsewhere guy wrote about her?
Oh no, what did he say?
What's his name?
Jeffrey Wells.
So Brian sent it to me because he thought I would think it was so insane, and I did. And his whole thing was about how it was way before it came out, she was too tall to play Diana, and it was like all about her size, like how tall she is. And then
oh no,
like,
that's the next lady that's gonna play her next year.
Oh, there's another Diana?
Yeah, the lady that plays her next year is Elizabeth Debicki, who's like over six foot tall.
Oh, I see. Okay, well then he was upset about that one. I guess I didn't read him say anything about this one. I don't follow.
Wait, but what did he just was like, she's too tall?
He was like, she's way too tall, and I think women that tall are disgusting. All I can say is I don't want a woman to have a bigger shoe size than me, and I know I'm not very PC because that's sizist, and the plus size movement won't like it, but women shouldn't be that tall or whatever. And I was like, you fucking idiot. Like the idea of like body positivity is not about, I mean, I guess it extends to height, but it's just so crazy to me that you would think that that's what people were talking about. They're talking about like your weight, like not worrying about your weight, not being like, I'm like 6 feet tall. And like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this man is insane.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call him a film critic at all. Like he's like a weird blogger, but
it's a gonzo journalist.
He fancies himself a gonzo journalist, but it is crazy how you can be, he's, I don't know, in his 60s or 70s, a man who, he really only thinks women, especially actresses, women on film are there to turn him on sexually. And if they
and
don't,
him specifically,
and yeah.
Like to like his specific taste. So like, he lacks the ability to say like, oh, even if it, the only point for a woman is to be attractive, which it's not, but like, let's say it is, even then it has to be like, I personally am attracted to this person. I can't even objectively say like, this is a beautiful woman. Like it's impossible for him if he doesn't like have like an animal brain, like response to the person.
Yeah. Jeffrey Wells, guys, don't look him up.
I don't, but I know that like, I know people in my life who are like weirdly obsessed with him because they hate him so much.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, hey, you know me, him and Sasha Stone, his best friend, who,
yeah,
she's another film Oscar blogger who now has pivoted again. She was like a super huge, like Joe Biden, like Democratic, like blue no matter who person, but now she like hates the Democrats and has become, I don't even know how this is possible, but she's like an alt centrist.
What does that mean?
She like hates the Democrats. She only listens to like Megyn Kelly's podcast and says how great it is, but she also hates Trump and she doesn't like Republicans, but she just thinks that woke culture has ruined the Democrats. And now she's like, I wash my hands of everything. It's crazy.
I gotta follow her. I mean, look, I also hate the Democrats and hate the Republicans.
Well, sure, but I'm like, at least hate the Democrats from the left. Like, at least like, if you're gonna be completely like online just being needlessly provocative, at least have like beliefs that like, you know, that
reason for it.
Yeah. And she, I'm like, Sasha, just like listen to Cumtown or listen to Truanon, and like you'll find your people there, but you can't approach
just
it.
Just listen to Cumtown. Leave her alone. People don't need to listen.
But like, it's like this weird baby boomer provocateur, which I'm like, you would find your home in the dirtbag left if only you would just say that people should have basic health care, but you refuse even that. So you get alienated from everyone.
I know. It's like, look, if you just accept Medicare for all, like you can walk away from the Democratic Party.
Yeah. You can be as big of an asshole as
morality intact.
Exactly. It's an easy exchange of like, I mean, yeah, it's crazy that these people refuse. I don't know. People are fucked up.
Well, because she's probably still mad about Bernie, right?
Oh yeah, she hates Bernie. Because that's the thing, is she's like the Puma, the post Puma. Well, Puma was party unity my ass. It was when Obama beat Hillary for the nomination. But then, so I don't think that they called themselves Puma during the Bernie debacle, but it was like this new generation of Hillary stans that like. Yeah. So she hates the left, but then now she hates the Democratic establishment because they basically, her big thing is they said all the like right wing protests and stuff were gonna, you know, be super spreader events, and all of Trump's rallies and stuff are super spreader events, but they don't open their mouths when it's like Black Lives Matter. And she thinks that was like the original, or like the sin of the Democrats is not being realistic, in her words, that these protests against police brutality were also super spreader events. But there's literally no evidence that they were, because like for the most part people were social distancing and wearing masks.
That's what I heard, that like I mean, I see people on the internet being like, well, they were, but everyone says that they weren't, so I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm just going by like after the summer, like, you know, the numbers didn't really go up that much after these protests, so it's just sort of like empirical evidence that they weren't. I mean, I don't know that they helped contain the disease, but it's not like, it's not like the Trump rallies. I don't know.
Well, the Trump rallies are also like aggressively like, we don't wear masks, and like we do not, like they are protesting the idea of quarantine. Like I don't know what the hell they're protesting, but they're aggressively not wearing masks and not social distancing to prove a political point, because they are really, really, really stupid.
Yep.
So it's not really the same thing, but whatever.
No, because
Anyway.
Oh my God. How did we even get here? We need to focus. Let's talk about
Goop. Need to focus on what's really important.
Goop, 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 goop. Yeah. All right. This is a brief, only a 2 newsletter week. Thank God.
Yeah. Thank fucking God.
What was your best?
Well, my best, I thought was going to be your best, was the dinner for two, the Thanksgiving for two.
Oh, it didn't make my best, but I appreciated it.
I appreciate it as well. Look, so, okay, again, I'm not cooking anything, so I don't really have a horse in this race, but before I decided to purchase all of my food for Thanksgiving and not make a single fucking thing, I was doing a really hardcore Google search, like, what can I make? Like, I need like a pared down Thanksgiving meal plan for two. Like, I know that someone's written this article. Where is it? I was searching, nothing. And I was really frustrated. And then the first one that I got in my inbox, of course, was from Goop, who really sometimes has their finger on the pulse, sometimes not so much. But hey.
Yeah, you would think every publication, I mean, I think because the lag time in magazines is so long, everyone's doing their like Thanksgiving issues, you know, in the spring. So it's only when you are, you know, when you do as little recipe testing or proofreading as possible, such as Goop, you're able to turn it around so quickly.
Exactly. Well, actually, I feel like now more and more of them are coming out, because I think that they're aware that like a lot of people are staying home, and I don't even know how responsible it is for them to still be like, here's a feast for 8 people, when we know we're not supposed to be doing that. And yet, see, this is another annoying fucking thing where like everybody's saying don't have these mass gatherings. Well, when I was trying to find like a small place to sell me just like two Thanksgiving dinners, like from a restaurant, everybody was like, buy our $500 full thing with like a turkey and like all this stuff. And this feeds 12 people. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be, don't tell Sasha Stone, but it's like, there should be regulations on this. Like, don't have fucking Thanksgiving.
It's capitalism. We like these restaurants and businesses are not getting any help. So, and they make so much of their money this time of year and they need to fucking sell this shit. And it's just insane.
People are going to die and they have to do it anyway. People are going to fucking die if they buy this shit and have these goddamn dinner parties. And it's like, I just don't understand why everyone's acting like this is okay, but that's what we do in this stupid fucking country. Like, we act like everything is fine as we know the product is actively killing people because we think that earning money is the most important thing on the planet. And it is, because otherwise, you know, we'll die from that.
Yeah. I mean, did you see Joe and Kamala just like started a fucking GoFundMe to pay for the transition now? Because they're not getting any help from the Trump administration. So they now they're like asking regular people for fucking money. It's so insane.
Oh my God.
They should have outlawed turkeys this year and just say no turkeys, like how the Danish did with all the minks that were infected. They should have just executed all the turkeys. No one can have a turkey, because that's what's, it's like a 12-pound turkey. It's like you two people obviously can't eat that. And it's going to encourage super spreader Thanksgivings.
Yes. Yes.
So annoying. But yeah, Goop, thank God, they're being responsible and has a recipe for a roast chicken, which is what I'm going to do. And normal people who are just having Thanksgiving with their, you know, their partners and their cats are going to substitute a turkey for a lovely roast chicken.
Yeah. Well, not me. I bought a turkey from Tam O'Shanter, which is
gonna that,
be, but not a full turkey. I bought like two Thanksgiving like plates or something.
That's gonna be great. For you, for all of our non-Los Angeles listeners, Tam O'Shanter is like a very old school sort of Scottish themed upscale pub with like you know, good old fashioned home food. So
it's owned by Lowry's, the chain. So if you've had Lowry's business
stuff. Prime rib is what they're known for most of the year, but I'm sure they're going to do a fantastic turkey. Yeah. So I agree. I mean, thank God Goop is stepping up and being socially responsible. And the roast chicken, it's a super herby, slow roasted chicken with shallots, was going to be the thing I would try, except I will not be in possession of that many herbs. So I might just do like with the lemon zest and maybe one herb, like thyme or something.
Oh, but you are going to do a version of this chicken?
I think, okay. So I'm still deciding. I have a roast chicken, or I have a chicken right now in my refrigerator. I'm either going to do this Goop one, or Andy Baragami in Bon Appetit has a roast chicken recipe with like caramelized onions that makes its own gravy, and that looks really good too. So I'll do one of the two or a combination of the two, but yeah. I have all the ingredients except for the herbs.
Yeah. I mean, roast chicken is like kind of straightforward.
Yeah. It's pretty easy. But yeah, I'm doing that. I'm doing Ina Garten's stuffing with apples and cranberries and sausage. And then I'm just going to do like a regular mashed potatoes, maybe with some scallions and the pies that I was going to bring up to my family. I ordered, and it's just a pumpkin and a chocolate pecan.
Chocolate pecan is my favorite.
So good.
Ugh, like a bourbon chocolate pecan.
Yes. So, there's a really fancy bakery close to my house called Proof, and they sell out of their pies really quickly. Last year I got the chocolate pecan, either rum or bourbon, from them. But I wasn't fast enough this year. So I ordered from Village Bakery, which is a nice bakery. It's not quite as fancy as Proof. And they also do a chocolate pecan.
Yeah. I got mine from a very fancy bakery called My Mom, who I begged to make me one because she makes them every year.
Yum, yum, yum. Okay. So my best is inspired by the let's see. It is the article entitled "How One Model Mother and Entrepreneur Hit Her Stride Outside the City." And it's this woman named Electra Viderman, who's a model. She looks very pretty. And I'm reading about how she, you know, is living in this farmhouse. She lives outside of the city, blah, blah, blah. New York was too, I guess, too fast paced for her, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I scroll down and I see her mom is Isabella Rossellini.
Oh my God.
And shocking. So, shocking. Exactly. So I guess my best is the idea of third generation nepotism. So
wow, you are accessible.
I know. If you guys know your Hollywood history, you know Isabella Rossellini is the daughter of director Roberto Rossellini and actress Ingrid Bergman. And this woman, Electra Viderman, is, you know, her daughter. So I think, I guess my thesis is second generation nepotism is tacky and too sort of striving and déclassé, whereas third generation nepotism, you almost are getting into that old money situation where you don't have to prove yourself and you can just chill.
Like and Apple.
Like Apple, exactly. Apple.
Or like, well, what about, hang on, but what generation is like Drew Barrymore?
Okay, so this is tough because I feel like sometimes fame, well, wealth doesn't really skip generations usually, but fame does skip generations. So I don't know. I feel like Drew Barrymore is almost in a different category because it's like she had her name, but she, her parents were like crazy, just sort of like drug addict hippies. So I think she's still, I mean, she obviously had, you know, one foot in the door because of her name, but it's not really the same thing as like a constant legacy of wealth and increasing, not increasing, but like at least lateral fame.
Yeah.
So who, I think
who is
like Dakota Johnson is another version of this where
yeah.
You have
wait, who was her grandma?
Tippi Hedren.
Oh, right.
And then Melanie Griffith is her mother, and then she's the third. So like I don't know who Jamie Lee Curtis's kids are, but like they will be that too, because it's like, you know, Tony Curtis, Jamie Lee Curtis, and then the kid. And maybe
is her kid coming up as a celeb?
I don't know. But that's the thing about third generation nepotism is you can choose to become a celeb, or like Electra Viderman, you can choose to just move to a farm and it doesn't affect you either way. Billy Lord, she's another a good third generation.
Which would you do if you were third generation?
You know, definitely when I was younger, I would have wanted, because I was like, you know, I went to theater school and I wanted to be an actor. So I definitely would have gone for it. But I don't know. No, knowing now a little bit more, being a little bit more jaded about the industry, I don't know that I would have been able to or wanted to sustain a career. And I probably by this time in my life would have just moved to my parents' giant farmhouse in upstate New York.
I know. I feel like if I was born into a family like that, I would have humiliated myself so profoundly. I would have been like Tom Hanks's rapping son.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been like, I wouldn't have handled it well. And I'm so weirdly like, I especially when I was younger, I was so like aggressive and so I don't know. I'm such a like I'm a rebel on that Gretchen Rubin chart. Like I would have just like done something so stupid. So hopefully I would. So I'd probably just be like recovering and like trying to like regain my dignity on a farm alone.
Oh yeah, I would have been in and out of rehab. You know, like a Hunter Biden level of times probably.
Oh my God.
So it's for the best probably that I wasn't part of a generational nepotism dynasty. Situation. Dynasty, exactly.
I know.
I don't know. But this is another thing. I'm just like sick in the head because I'm like, oh my God, how cool it is that she's the daughter of Isabella Rossellini and the granddaughter of Ingrid Bergman. Like that's so neat. And I'm like, this is not neat. Like this is just dumb luck. And this woman is probably not interesting at all.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just dumb luck, but I don't know. It's weird. Like I definitely have like pride in like things that my family accomplished when I was like, before I was born. Is that weird?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, I do a little bit too. Especially when it's like, you know, your family comes from poor immigrants and they had to like make something of themselves.
Or
not what? Necessarily
make something, but they made,
or not made something.
But they did stuff. Yeah, and like, I don't know, I definitely like see myself reflected, or like I try to be like, don't forget, like, you know, your grandma like got hit on by Valerie Solanas or whatever. Like,
that's cool.
But it's not like she was, you know, Ingrid Bergman or something.
My great grandfather was friends with Amelia Earhart.
That's so cool. See, it's like stuff like that is cool.
Because he was a photojournalist, and he like they were just they knew each other. Yeah, that's that type of stuff is cool.
I mean, stuff like that's cool.
I mean, they took a picture together. Like, this could be family lore, and maybe she didn't even know who he was. But my grandfather always said, "Oh yeah, they like were friendly."
That's good.
Who knows? Okay, what was your worst?
Oh, so I feel like I owe an apology to the people of Goop Yourself and to all of the vagina having humans on the planet. Because I think that I was actually, and especially to Dr. Gorda, because I think that I was too harsh on my pelvic floor takes. I think that actually pelvic floor work is like real and like super important, and I think it's good now.
Gerda convinced you to do your Kegels.
Actually, it was like an Instagram thing, and I don't even know really what you're supposed to do for. I think it's more like after, like if you've given birth, that it's really important to like maintain the health of your like vagina and your bladder and stuff, but because it's like, you know, that shit gets worn out. But I do understand now that it's like very important, and I respect the pelvic floor.
Well, apology accepted.
Thank you. Yeah, I have to apologize to you because I can't talk to every pelvic floor in the world.
And this comes, there's a very, you know, sexually suggestive pelvic floor advice column by Gerda with a beautiful female torso stock footage.
Yeah, I also feel like I used to have a strong pelvic floor when I did bar classes all the time. I don't really know. I seriously don't know what it is. I still don't really get it. But I think that if you do like bar classes, you get a strong pelvic floor.
For sure. I'm trying to strengthen my core. Because I realized I've been like, whenever I like stand up or sit down, I just sort of like collapse. Or like use my hands and like just like, and then I'm like, this is, my core is not going to, like, it's all downhill from here as far as strength and looks go. So I'm like, I need to be conscious of like moving like a dancer and moving from my core. So the last few days I've been trying to do that.
I know it's kind of scary when you get into your like mid to late 30s and you start to realize like, okay, it is literally downhill from here. And it's like, I can't just exercise to like look hot. I actually am going to have to do this to like not be in like crippling pain all the time and to like just be like a functioning human being for the next however many years I have left.
Yeah, because you see, I mean, some like older people on the street and they have hunchbacks and they're shuffling along, and it's like, I mean, some of that I guess is, you know, bad luck, but you're like, oh, if there's anything I can do to prevent that, I should.
I know, it's so sad.
Okay, my worst, and this will be quick, it was sort of the last straw today. This new product called Symbiome. And it's a new fucking line of skincare by this dude, Larry Weiss. And his big gimmick is the skin microbiome. And these.
We got a new one.
I can't. We knew about skin. We knew about the microbiome. But did we know that skin has its own microbiome? Now we do.
Maybe everything has a microbiome.
I mean, he says, you know, he doesn't understand why the gut microbiome has gotten all the publicity in the past few years, because the skin microbiome is just as important.
But doesn't your gut microbiome, they've been telling me that everything is controlled by the gut.
Larry
but
Weiss,
now it's the skin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Stephen Gundry is an inside out type of person, and then Larry Weiss is an outside in. It all starts with
the
skin.
I think it's like a common like sort of like nutritional or like health related scam called essentialism, where they say that, you know, all of like chiropractic is like this, where they'll say that like all of your problems come from your spine, or like other doctors who say like all of your problems come from your gut or whatever, when really it's like, you know, things are happening all over your body. Yeah. And
I mean, they have an economic incentive to make it seem like whatever their specialty is the most important.
Yeah, you can say that again.
So he has, oh God, he has a restorative cream, a cleanser, and then all these fucking different types of oils, and they're all like $85. I don't even know. They just look boring. And Goop, I feel like if Goop is pivoting towards manufacturing their own skincare products, I'm like, why do they keep selling all these other ones too? It's like too much.
Dude, I don't fucking know. It's like they really are selling too many things. I feel like they're gonna go the way of last name. Brian watches like all these like YouTube videos sometimes about like fast food companies and stuff, trying to like get more information.
Sure. He has a
very successful podcast, comedy podcast about a fast food company. So it's like in his wheelhouse.
Why are you not going to say the name of it?
Oh, it's called Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's. And we watched a video last night about Boston Market and how they like had to file for bankruptcy because they started selling too much stuff. Like they were selling rotisserie chickens, and then they expanded and they were selling like meatloaf and others and like, I don't know, other stuff. And then after that, they started selling sandwiches, and like sandwiches was really their downfall because then they had to compete with like McDonald's. And then like they were just selling so much stuff that like people like love the food and like couldn't get enough of it, but they were like couldn't keep up with the demand, and they ended up having to like file for bankruptcy. I feel like that's what Goop is doing. Like they're selling so much stuff, like how can they keep up with this?
Yeah, it's gonna it's like gonna turn into Sephora. It's like, what I mean, I'll go back to this in my saddest, which I'll talk about a Goop collaboration that truly shocked me.
Okay, I can't wait to hear about it.
But like, yeah, they keep, I mean, I get how they need to expand their customer base from like, you can't, I don't know how long-term success, if you're just selling to like the 1% of the 1%. So I get how they need to broaden their base to some extent, but it's like,
I mean, they're not selling to the 1% of the 1%. I feel like they're,
well, yeah, that's true.
Put that stuff on their catalog to like get attention. That's like advertising for them. Like, I don't think they sell any of it. They probably, we know what they sell. They release it. They sell like $50 bottles of eye cream and like maybe a couple of skirts or something.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah, Goop Glow is really popular. Like it's like but that's why I do feel like their branded stuff, it seems to be popular. And then, you know, there's all like the legacy products like Vintner's Daughter, you know, some Tata Harper, like there's, you know, Barbara Sturm, like there's some ones that they're going to keep. But like, why are we adding things at this point? Why are we adding these new doctors and these new fucking products?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's how they like keep the whole thing sort of, I don't know, fresh in people's minds, because if you can, it does feel less like creepy and culty to buy if there's stuff on their website that you can also get on like Nordstrom or something, because they're so like weird and like esoteric and scary, like as a brand, that if it's like, well, the stuff is also available on like Sephora, you can get it at the mall, like some of the stuff isn't really that like exclusive or whatever, it's normal stuff, you might feel like a little bit more comfortable like purchasing it, and it might be kind of a thrill to buy it from Goop instead of to buy it from Sephora or whatever, just because it's like, you know, then you get to buy into this like lifestyle thing.
Yeah, you buy it from Goop, so you get to, you know, pay shipping, you never know when you're gonna get it, it's just a big surprise. Have, like, a little
surprise for yourself. And the pleasure of paying twice for the shipping and waiting, you know, 6 to 8 months to receive your like little tiny bottle of like disgusting superfood powder that you'll try once and throw out.
But yeah, I'd say let's stop. Let's see where we're at product wise. Let's maybe cull the herd a little bit and then start fresh. Much like, yeah, this is going to go the same way as Boston Market. I swear to God.
It's the new Boston Market.
I like Boston Market.
I know, me too. Also, I was like, kind of wanted to just like order from Boston Market, but
is there a Boston Market around here?
I thought there was, but I think it closed down. There used to be one, but I might be getting it confused with like a honey baked ham place.
Also a great brand.
Another, yeah, perfect brand.
All right. What was your craziest or your saddest?
I just had a saddest. So one of my saddest was the house goodbye, but it's not really that sad because they sold it a long time ago.
Oh yeah.
But the one that I like that stuck with me as also being very sad was one of the gifts in the gift guide, or it was like, let's see, was it in 9 thoughtful gifts you're giving to yourself? Yes, it was. It was. They recommended giving yourself a bouquet of dead flowers because they would never die on you and you don't have to maintain them. And I can understand, you know, I'm sure that they're very beautiful and I understand there's like sort of like a Victorian romantic aesthetic to a bouquet of dead flowers that is appealing, including to me. But the idea of gifting yourself a bouquet of dead flowers or just like considering it, I feel like your dried flowers should come from like, you should dry them and they should be like, it should be like your wedding bouquet or something.
And yeah. It should also be like a memory and like effort into, you know, preserving them.
Yeah. And like, there's just something so depressing about like, oh, I just get them dead so I don't have to deal with them is like, just makes me sad. Like just buy the flowers and then throw them out when they die. Like why are we spending $100 on flowers that are dead? It's just depressing. It's just like, I can't deal with it during COVID. Like, I don't want to look at a bouquet of dead flowers while I'm also in quarantine. I want to have fresh fucking flowers so I can be reminded of, you know, life and beauty and progress and not think about death and decay.
Yeah, I 100% agree that this is the wrong time to get into dead flowers. Any sort of gothic aesthetic, it's just too depressing. I asked John today if we can put up our Christmas decorations early because I need a little boost. I need some Bath and Body Works candles. I need some Christmas spirit. I need something.
And yeah, I was actually considering getting a Christmas tree this year, which would be like, you know, shocking for me because I have never gotten a Christmas tree. And I
might too. We haven't gotten one in a few years, but I might. Yeah, I mean, I might need something piney to smell.
Something piney. Yeah. Well, actually, that's not true. I got one once in Chicago, once or twice, but that was it.
Okay. My saddest. This was just like, what the fuck is Goop doing? And I realized again, they have to partner with these very sort of, you know, middle class brands. But this one, I was like, what the fuck? They had an article called "What Goop Staffers Are Gifting Themselves This Year" in partnership with our friends at Anthropology. And I think, I don't know what offended me specifically about Anthropology. Anthropology, to be completely honest, full disclosure, I worked at Anthropology in college. I don't know. Okay, I've talked about it. It's because it's owned by Urban Outfitters, and it's like, I feel like 20 years ago or something, it had sort of the allure of being slightly upscale. Like, the clothes are relatively expensive for being such shit quality. But now it's in every mall. No cool trend-setting woman is like, oh, I just like picked this up at Anthropology. It seems like a almost like a QAnon, like a red state conservative woman brand, right? Am I crazy?
I mean, I don't really know. I guess I could see that. I feel like this might be a little bit of like you not wanting to be a member of like any club that would have have someone like you as a member. Like I've always liked Anthropology. I mean, yeah, it's in every mall, but I think it always sort of has been. Like, I've always considered it to be sort of like a mall store. It's never been like a, I've never considered it to be like a designer store, like something that would be, but it's like, as far as those things go, I consider it sort of in the realm of like a Free People.
Yeah. Well, it's all the same. It's all the same company. They're also on the Urban Outfitters.
I mean, I don't know. I have some stuff from Anthropologie. I don't hate it.
I mean, I like some of their, you know, home decor and stuff is nice. I guess it's because, like, even though Anthropologie is, you know, an older brand than Goop, it seems sometimes, because Goop to me is like the true, you know, high end best example of everything you could get. Anthropologie, it just seems like you're striving for something better than what you actually are if you get something in Anthropologie. And maybe that's just like my snobbishness.
What are you striving, like, if you buy stuff at Anthropologie, like, where do you wish that you were shopping?
I think you wish that you were shopping at like a cute little, you know, designer boutique in Nolita, or, you know, a great like open air market in Marrakesh, or, you know, the most cool, like, vintage, you know, store, on the Lower East Side or something, but you're not at any of these places. So you're at Anthropologie. You're a suburban middle-class woman driving a minivan who wants to escape from the drudgery of her life. And so she goes to Anthropologie. I'm sounding just like a complete asshole, but.
No, I think that, like, to me, yeah, like, Anthropologie definitely is front. And it also, Urban Outfitters has the same thing of being sort of like posery. Like, mm-hmm. Urban Outfitters, like, is like the younger version of Anthropologie, and they're both like, oh, I don't really know any cool stores, but I can sort of adopt this look if I get the right amount of things from like Urban Outfitters. So I look like, it's like when like conservative people are like, oh, the hipsters at Starbucks and Urban Outfitters. Like, I feel like that's how they talk about it. But I mean, I also do like the stuff that they sell at both of those places.
Oh, totally. I mean, I shopped at Urban Outfitters forever, and like, I will still go into Anthropologie and buy gifts, and, you know, they have really nice plates. I think it's just like Goop. I still have this romantic vision of Goop of just being above it all, and stuff like this reminds me that it's not.
I feel like Goop is exactly the same as Anthropologie.
Oh, you're right.
And I feel like they're like, the lines that they carry and everything is like very Anthropologie to me. Like, it's very like, or to me, it's like Anthropologie plus Nordstrom plus like a couple of things that like they make themselves, but like, it's not, especially their clothes are like I like them a lot, but I don't feel like they're like high fashion or something.
Goop is definitely like, at least like, more expensive than Anthropologie as far as the clothes, but it's the same. I mean, you're targeting pretty much the same type of person. You're
targeting the same audience.
I guess I want to think of Goop as like high end in the same sense of like Mary-Kate and Ashley, The Row. And I know like The Row would never do a collaboration with Anthropologie. So then I expect Goop not to either, even though it's not really the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the style too, because like Goop loves that, like, Anthropologie, you can always go in there and find like a dress that would be normal, but there's like a huge hole in the midsection or something. Like, there's always like a fucking annoying like thing that makes whatever it is weird, and also has this like bohemian edge to it. Not everything there, but a lot of the stuff there, where it's like all like layers and drippy and droopy and whatever.
I'll tell you, and I don't know if this is still the case, but when I worked there, Anthropologie said to the employees that there were always three concepts in the store going on. Oh. There was always a super feminine French girly concept. Mm. There was a like a vintage inspired concept. And there was like a multicultural world concept. And then every season they would slightly tweak them, but it would always be those three like vibes going on.
Yeah. And I feel like Goop sort of has a similar aesthetic. Like, they have like the chic French thing. They have the like bohemian like artist thing. And they have like the romantic, like hyper feminine.
Yeah.
Like, those three looks are very, like, very, very well represented on the Goop website.
So maybe they're not that different.
But I understand why it's like a mall store and you want Goop to be higher. I mean, I know it's like, it's always depressing when, but it's like, to me, once they did it with CB2, it's like, I think that.
Oh yeah. That was the beginning of the end.
Are like exactly the same.
I mean, it's only a matter of time before they have a collab with Target. Like it's, and it's, you know what? That's fine.
I'm sure there have been lots of meetings about Goop with Target.
And that would be great. Cause actually like, then I could like afford to buy it. So, but Target is like, to me, Target is like, it is what it is. Like, it's not trying to be anything different or upscale. Anthropology is in that like weird. And maybe it's because the customer base is a little older. I feel like they should know better. Whereas Urban Outfitters or even like Hot Topic is like, you know, poser for like middle schoolers and high school. And Urban Outfitters is like college age posers. And I'm like, that's fine. But once you're in, I don't know, once you're in your adult years, make a little more effort. Even though I don't.
I don't know. It's so funny. Cause like Anthropology was my favorite store when I was in like high school and college. That was when I went there.
That's funny. There. Cause it's like specifically their target demo is like a woman, 30 to 50 is what they always told us.
Really? Yeah. I always did find the clothes. Like, but I felt like that, like, French girl stuff they had, like, I loved it. And like, I would always be seeking that stuff out, but I could never afford it. I have to go in like the sale room in the back,
which is always a disaster area. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's probably my own personal baggage, like everything else. What would you try?
I would try, let's see. I would try, oh, the loosen your waistband guy. There was this guy named, sorry, I'm like looking up his name right now. There was this guy named Eric Pepper, which I think is a cute name for a man to have.
It is.
And he has, he's a PhD in something, and he has this new book called Tech Stress. And it's all about how, like basically because you sit crouched in front of a computer all day, it like increases your stress and it like makes you have like physical pain. And he has this 5-step process for alleviating that. So like, once you feel your pain, it's too late. So just assume that you're unaware of what's happening in your body. And then take 20-minute stretch breaks. Then he says that you're supposed to breathe 6 times a minute.
That's crazy.
And then he also says that you are, let me see. He also says that you are supposed to choose what you focus on. Like, you have the ability to pick what it is that you focus on. So like, don't worry about, like, when you have like negative thoughts, like replace them with positive thoughts or something. I'm not totally sure. Haven't read the book, but I do feel like I'm in constant pain because I'm like always like sitting in front of a computer. And like, I do have like, he's talking about how like, you know, it's when you see something traumatic, like it's common to have like a trauma response in your body and to like feel it physically. Which is definitely something that like I experience and like many people experience.
And he's saying there's so much visual stimulus now from, you know, different screens and consuming content. Your body doesn't really know the difference between a real like fear response and then responding to something in, you know, the cyber world. So it's like you're just constantly bombarded with adrenaline and like all those things that should not happen as often as they do.
Yeah. And also just like being crouched in front of a computer is just like not good for your back, basically.
Oh, for sure.
So all of these things, I'm like, yes, like I understand this man. And like, I kind of want to read his book and do his program.
So you should read this book. I'm 2/3 of the way through A Return to Love.
Mm.
Even though I think my loan is expiring, so hopefully it'll come again soon.
I read A Return to Love like during the when she was writing.
Oh sure. The middle part is a little too much about like dating and stuff, which I'm like, yeah.
No offense to Marianne, but it does sort of follow the same thing as like a lot of those self-help books where it just sort of like repeats itself and like kind of goes in what feels like unnecessary directions to like prove its point over and over again. Do you know what I mean?
Because it's not, there's not that much there. Like it's maybe.
I feel like most self-help books could be basically a pamphlet, but they have to make it like 300 pages or whatever. So they just like fill it with like personal stories or whatever.
And she's written like 25 books. So she's
a genius.
That's what she's doing. Yeah. Okay. I would try those recipes, the roast chicken and the gravy. What would you buy?
Oh God, this was a hard one. I think I may have left it. Oh yeah. All I wrote was sick of clothes. I think this is why I was like talking about the group, like not being surprised about them. Like I was just going through, they're having the big sale right now. I was just like going through it and I was just like, this is just like not exciting. Like this, it's like all clothes are the fucking same. Like every piece of clothing that I can afford looks exactly the same as every other piece of clothing. And they're all from, like you said, like the Miniman shame factories of like Anthropology, Nordstrom, Goop on sale. Like that's where I get my clothes and they are all, or like cheaper places. And like, they're all boring. I'm sick of all of them.
I mean, it's the same for men. It's like Uniqlo, if I'm being a little spendy, Everlane, maybe H&M, maybe Banana Republic, J. Crew, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I haven't bought anything from Uniqlo in a long time, but I mean, I'm not going to buy any clothes for the rest of the year, but just, like, the stuff is just, like, even when you know what I mean? Like, sometimes even when you like it, it's, like, I'm just looking at the same thing over and over again, and it's, like, I already have a dress with, like, huge sleeves that's, like, falling off my body. Like, I already have, like, a pair of pants that looks like it's made out of, like, a burlap sack. Like, I have all this stupid shit.
Yeah. And especially, like, when you're in your house for months at a time, it becomes so clear that we don't need 90% of our wardrobe. Like, I mean, I'm wearing these Uniqlo sweatpants right now and I wear them almost every day and they're perfect. And I could just have like three pairs of these and never buy clothes for the rest of my life and be perfectly happy.
Oh my God. That's the most depressing thing I've ever heard, Ryan.
but they're so comfortable. I couldn't really find anything I really wanted to buy this week. I did see, it does look really beautiful. In that Anthropology article, they were allowed to talk about some non-anthropology items, and one of them was a Staub tea kettle.
Yeah.
Which just looks so beautiful. It's like a sort of a slate blue, you know, ceramic with a metal handle. And I think it comes with like its own little tea ball, so you can actually brew the tea in the kettle.
That's
looks
cute.
Gorgeous. And it's $200.
That was the same article where I had the dead flowers.
Yeah. And it would just be like a tea kettle is something you can just have on your stove all the time. And it's sort of it's the aesthetics are just as important as the utility, I think. And this one is beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you drink much tea?
Every once in a while. I mean, I drink like a few times a week. I do have a tea kettle on my stove permanently, but it's like red one, and I make tea I don't know, maybe two or three nights a week.
Oh, that's a lot. Herbal tea?
Yes. I like this one called like Henry, what the fuck is it called? Henry and someone, I don't know. It's like their famous blend. It's called Blue and Yellow, and it's like a really nice herbal tea.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you more, but
off
the top of my head.
Yeah. Because I tried like to cut myself off caffeine wise after one cold brew in the morning. So when I drink tea, it's almost always herbal. I will do like a mint or there's like a peach herbal tea that's nice. I have some like fall festival one now, but I haven't even opened it, so I don't know what it tastes like. But yeah, I like it.
Oh, it's called Harney and Sons Yellow and Blue Caramel and Lavender.
I've heard of Harney and Sons. They're the ones with like the geometric three-dimensional tea bags, right?
I think that some of them are like that, but I've had, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really drink herbal tea unless it's like before bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to be sort of psycho to drink herbal tea in the morning.
Well, I need caffeine in the morning and I like to have it throughout the day.
I think it's really helped me to like not have that second jolt of caffeine at lunchtime or even the late morning. Cause even earlier this year, I feel like I would just be so tired in the afternoon, like around 3 or 4. And now, I don't have those bouts of lethargy anymore in the afternoon. So I don't know what it is, but it's either that, or I'm just exercising more consistently. I think that's all it could be.
Could be both. Who knows?
All right, guys.
Okay. I think
this is it. I guess we're taking next week off probably, or are we going to do it?
Let's take next week off for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need to hear us.
Yeah.
Spend time with your whatever family that you already live with. And
yeah.
And Zoom. We love you.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Remember, have a roast chicken. Don't have a turkey.
Don't have a turkey or what, do whatever. I mean, we're not going to tell you what to do, but don't go to a party or something. Come on, like, be smart.
Yeah.
Do whatever. I don't know what to tell you. You know what to do. The information's out there. Be smart.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.